change around my team. Yeah, we off the leash. You could look us in the eyes, see we have peace. Black and gold, that's the colors when we go to war. When we step up on that field, you gon' hear my roar. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats. We them tiger cats, we them tiger cats.
Yeah, nobody hitting harder, better keep your guard up. Cause with everything we draw, we can score it when we wanna.
Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Oh, Mike. Is this the saddest you've ever been after a win?
I'd have to say so. I mean, I can't recall any other game where they won and I was, you know, this frowny-faced about it. But, yeah, it was tough to watch the rest of that game after what happened. But we did get the win. We are 5-1, but, you know, we all know what the bad news is.
Yeah, so obviously the Ticats, our Ticats, beat the Bombers 23-15 last Friday, knocking off the CFL's last undefeated team. Tabbies are now at 5-1 for the first time since 1998. They're first place in the division. They're tied for the best record in the league. It's all good stuff. Like, this is what we dream of as fans. This is what we've been waiting for and wanting for the 5 years that you and I have been doing this show. And yet, it just feels hollow because I'm sure everyone who listens to this knows our starting quarterback, our all-star, our MOP, Jeremiah Mazzoli, his season is over after tearing his ACL late in the first quarter. It's just like, I don't believe in curses. I don't believe in, like, I just don't believe in stuff like that. But this is the second time in a row now that this team has started to look like the best team in football, and out of nowhere, our star quarterback tears his knee and is done for the season. Like, we talk about, and I would have lost count of how many times, Mike, that you and I have talked about the 2015 season, and it feels like, depending on how everything goes the rest of the way this year, that we could be sitting here doing the same thing, talking about the 2019 season, like, as these 2 years are the 2 years that kind of got away. Like, yeah. 2015, I don't care what anyone says, I will never be convinced that the Hamilton Tiger Cats wouldn't have steamrolled through that season and absolutely 100% won the Grey Cup. Like, there is no doubt in my mind that in the alternate universe where Zach Caleros doesn't get hurt, the Tiger Cats put up their best season ever and absolutely just roll to a championship. And I'm wondering if we're going to think the same thing about 2019, because at 5-1, best record in the league, the defense playing out of its mind, the offense finally in this game, like, they were up 14-0 after two quick scores. They were like, in my mind, if Jeremiah Mazzoli doesn't get hurt in this game, I think they beat the Bombers by like 20. You know what I mean? Like, that's how well they were playing. The defense was playing out of its mind. Special teams was contributing. And then Mazzoli gets hurt, and it was like kind of a slog the rest of the way. And I feel like sort of the crowd got taken out of the game because everyone's sitting there going, like, not, like, again, really? Like, why? And I'll give credit to all of us sitting in the crowd. By the end of the game, we had gotten back into it. I think Tim Hortons Field was very loud late in that game. But Mazzoli's done for the year, Mike. Like, where do we go from here?
We're just going to have to pick up the pieces, I guess. I mean, it's really too bad because I don't think we saw the best of this offense yet this season. And you mentioned, you know, the first two drives of this game looked pretty darn good. And, you know, the defense and the special teams have been playing great. If you know, Mazzoli's in there and we hit the peak of this offense, you know, reach its potential, we could have been unstoppable. But once again, it's a non-contact play where the quarterback just goes down on the turf and they're up for the season. And, you know, I know you were at the game, but when I was watching on TV, he went down and he was live mic'd. So someone asked if he's okay, and he said no. And as soon as he said that, I knew that it was a serious injury, because obviously he knows his body better than anyone else. It's just really too bad. A guy like Jeremiah Mazzoli, who's put so much work into being a starting quarterback in this league, and obviously he'll be a starting quarterback when he comes back, but it's just so tough to go down like that, not even being hit.
Yeah, I just wonder too if we'll ever see this Jeremiah Mazzoli again.
Right. I was thinking about that, because he comes back, you never know with the ACL if he's going to be as mobile, and he's proven himself that he can be a pocket passer type of quarterback, but that extra element to his game is a real benefit to him and the team.
Well, and look at Zach Caleros. When he went down, he was, I think by most people's estimation, the best player in the game. Like, mm-hmm. I think a lot of people would have looked at him and pegged him as the top player in the CFL at the time. And he's never looked the same since that injury. And I know he's dealing with different injuries now, concussions mostly, but he's never sort of recaptured that magic. And it makes you wonder if, like, they're both hard workers. Like, that's what you hear about. They're constantly in their playbooks. They're constantly watching film. They're physically, they're hard workers. So they're, that sort of thing is never sort of up for question, up for debate. But these knee injuries, they can change a player's career. And maybe we never see Jeremiah Mazzoli reach these heights ever again. And that's a damn shame. Like to lose two quarterbacks like this over the span of 5 years, over the span of 4 years, really, it just sucks. Like, yeah. Why can't we have nice things, Mike?
I don't know. It's the punishment of being a Tiger Cat fan. We just can't seem to, ever since 99, we just can't seem to grab that brass ring. And it's very disappointing. But we got Dane Evans. I know he's unproven. But, when Claros went down, Mazzoli came in 2015. He almost led us to a Grey Cup. Maybe Dane Evans can do the same thing. We still have a very solid team, especially with that offensive line. I have confidence in Dane Evans, and I even have more confidence with that O-line in front of him. I mean, he's going to have time back there. They're going to have to incorporate the run game a little bit more. This offense is going to change. Obviously, they're not going to change everything, but I think there's going to be a little couple tweaks in there. Play to his strengths a bit. But listen, when it first happened, I was pretty down. I was pretty much saying to myself, oh, this is, the season's over again, with another lost season, but a couple days to really think about it. And we still have a shot at this. The Eastern Division is weak as usual. And you never know. If we make it to the Grey Cup, it's only one game. Anything can happen. The weather conditions could be, could be snowy, could be anything. So anything's possible, but it's still very, very depressing to see, just on a personal level, just to see Jeremiah Mazzoli go down.
I wrote this on a piece for 3Down, and I'll preface this by saying I'm not comparing Dane Evans, who is completely unproven. He's had, two games worth of experience. Started a game late last year, obviously played the majority of this game against Winnipeg and had a few plays here and there in some other games. The blow of the Argos in particular, he played not a significant amount, but not an insignificant amount of playing time either. I'd say all told, he probably has about 2 games worth of experience. So clearly, there's not a lot of things to look at in that regard. But at one point, Mike, we didn't know who Bo Levi Mitchell was. We didn't know who Trevor Harris was. We didn't know who Matt Nichols was. We didn't know who Mike Riley was. And the list goes on and on. We can go back decades and talk about all the quarterbacks who at one point were an unknown, unproven backup. Danny McManus, a guy that we here in Hamilton and Ticap fans around the world hold in such high regard, was at one point a third-string quarterback that no one knew. When he won the Grey Cup in BC, he was a backup that year and came in when Ken Austin got hurt and mm-hmm. led them to a Grey Cup. And then he became who he is. Now, I'm not saying that Dane Evans is the next Mike Riley, but we didn't know who Mike Riley was before he got a shot. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, this is how you become a star in this league at quarterback.
Jeremiah Mazzoli is a perfect example. People go down.
Yep. Yeah, I mean, people go down, unfortunately, and you have that opportunity to step in and show what you have. And that's how you earn starting quarterback position in this league. It's not like the NFL where you're in the draft and you're a highly touted draft pick and, you know, you're playing at USC or whatever and everyone knows you. That's not how it works in the CFL. You come in, you play as a backup, and then when you get your opportunity, you come in and show what you have, and then other teams or the team you're on right now will want to sign you to a big contract or whatever. But this is Dane Evans' opportunity to come in and show that he can be a starting quarterback in this league.
The Ticats signed him to a 3-year contract extension this offseason. They traded Johnny Manziel a little over a year ago because of the faith they had in Evans. I know it's weird for Ticat fans to sort of puff their chest. We're kind of very self-deprecating fans, and maybe it has to do with all the losing seasons and the 9-9 seasons and the 20 years without a championship. But there's no reason to think that Dane Evans can't come in and be Nick Arbuckle. Like, we've seen the Stamps. Have they really missed a beat all that much without Bo in the lineup? Like, the team around him is pretty good. I think Calgary, if I'm not mistaken, is sitting at 4-2. Like, the Stamps haven't looked terrible without Bo. Arbuckle's played pretty well. He's made some mistakes. He's made some great plays. You know what I mean? Like, he's shown you what a guy who has been around for a couple of years can look like when given an opportunity. Why can Dane Evans not do the same thing? Why can he not? He's surrounded by a ton of skill position players on the offensive side of the ball. He's got a world-class defense. Like, we're going to get into this game in particular in a little bit, but this defense right now, I mean, maybe the numbers don't show it, but I'd be hard-pressed to think of a defense in this league right now that's playing as good as Hamilton's was. Like, the way that they suffocated the Bombers in this one is something we're going to spend a lot of time talking about, and is something that I think is going a little under the radar because Mazzoli gets hurt. Now everyone's like, oh, the season's kind of over. But the defense is spectacular. We've talked ad nauseum since the season started about how good the special teams has been. What, like, if the Ticats offense becomes the league's, as opposed to being the league's best offense, they become the league's, I don't know, let's say fifth best offense, because that's right in the middle. This team can win 10, 11 games and get to the great. Like, there's no reason why we should sit here and be all doom and gloom simply because the star quarter. But we didn't see this from Calgary fans. They didn't get all up in arms and say the season's over when Mitchell got hurt. We shouldn't be. This is a talented football team. And I know that that comes off to fans of other teams. Maybe we're arrogant or whatever, but the proof is in the pudding. They're 5-1, Mike. They're the best team right now. They have tied for the best record in the CFL. And that's not just because of Jeremiah Mazzoli. In fact, for a lot of this season, it's been kind of in spite of the offense. It's the defense and special teams have pretty much held this team into games while the offense has found its way. I see no reason why that can't continue.
No, and you look at one of the guys that's considered, you know, one of the hottest quarterbacks in the league right now. It's Vernon Adams Jr. And, you know, I believe someone pointed this out on Twitter, but Dane Evans beat him out for the second spot on the Tiger Cats. So, listen, I am still keeping it together. I'm trying to at least, and I think that this team can do some really good things. You know, it's obviously a team game, and the quarterback position is hugely important. We know this, but I think they can coach this kid up. I think he has the raw talent to be a really good quarterback in this league, and we're going to find out what he's made of in the rest of the season, because, you know, he's going to have a target on his chest, but if you look around the league, I mean, what is it? 6 starting quarterbacks are out right now.
6 of the 9 quarterbacks who started the season have missed time due to injury.
And obviously they're not all out for the whole season. If any of them are, I'm not sure. I can't remember at the moment. But, you know, teams are missing their starting quarterbacks right now. And I think our team is good enough to sustain victories over, you know, the rest of the season. And, you know, come out with a pretty good record. Hopefully not above 500, because then I have to shave my legs. But I was thinking this, you know, 9-9 would be nice. No, I'm just kidding. No, I want them to do as well as they can, and I'll shave my whole body if necessary.
Look, let's be terribly pessimistic right now.
All right.
What if
I can do that?
I know you can. You excel at it sometimes, my friend. There's 12 games left in the year. If they win 5 of them, which means they lose seven. They finish the year 10-8. That's probably first place in the division. If they just match their win total from what they have already, they're 10-8. If they go 500 the rest of the way, Mike, they finish 11-7, which is one of the best records the Ticats have ever had. Like, this is not Dane Evans taking over for a team that's 1-5. This is Dane Evans getting to come in for a team that's pretty darn good and sitting at 5-1. Like, there's no reason to think the Ticats can't win double-digit games, because the only change is at quarterback. And as much as we love Jeremiah Mazzoli, and we talked about this, I think it was the last time we recorded, about how weird it was that, like, Mazzoli's, like, you look at the numbers and they're not that bad, but at the same time, he hasn't played that well. I see no reason why Dane Evans can't come in and somewhat replicate what Mazzoli has done. There's going to be stretches during the season now where Evans is going to look like the second year player that he is. Like, he's going to have a 3-interception game. They're going to lose a couple of games in these last 12 games that they wouldn't have if Mazzoli was the starter. Like, you think back to the time that Caleros got hurt against Edmonton and Jeff Matthews came in and threw a bunch of interceptions and they lost that game by like 7 points or something. Caleros stays in that game. Those things don't happen. They beat Edmonton. You know what I mean? Like, there are going to be games where you're going to shake your head and go, oh man, that's one that got away. But at the end of the day, I look at where this team is now. I look at where, like, they still get to play the Argos a couple of times. They haven't played Ottawa yet, and they look like kind of a shit show. BC is coming up for a couple of games, and yeah, they're probably going to get it together at some point, but it's like they're 1-6. Like, the long, yeah. And they have Mike Riley. They have the guy that's considered arguably the best quarterback in the game, and they're 1-6. Like, the Ticats are 5-1. And if they go 500 the rest of the way, they finish 11-7. And I don't think that that's an unrealistic. I think that's a pessimistic look at where this team can finish over the last 12 games of the year. So I see no reason why this team can't still finish first in the East. And you finish first in the East, it means you're hosting the game and you got to win one to get to the Grey Cup. And then once you get to the Grey Cup, it's, as we've seen in the last few years, oh, there's no way that Ottawa will beat Calgary. There's no way that Toronto will beat Calgary. It happened. So, I don't know. Look, I am not as confident with this team. I had visions of like 14-4 dancing in my head because of how good this team had started. Those have kind of gone away. But I honestly, Mike, I see no reason why this team still can't finish first and still can't compete for and actually get to the Grey Cup. Winning it, that's a whole other story. But getting there is half the battle. You get there, then it's one game and you never know what can happen.
Yeah, I think it's definitely doable. I'm just going to rely on this great offensive line that we have. I think that, you know, with a meteoric, I'm not saying Dane Evans is a mediocre quarterback, but I'm just saying if you provide a quarterback time, good things are going to happen. And I truly, truly believe that this offensive line will do that. And I think that the offensive line will open holes for the running game as well. So listen, I think we can still be productive on offense without Jeremiah Mazzoli. And you just got to keep your fingers crossed that, you know, we can find our way with Dane Evans behind center.
So I think it goes without saying, but we'll say it anyway. We wish Jeremiah Mazzoli a speedy recovery. Can't wait to see him back on the field in a Ticats uniform, hopefully. He is a free agent at the end of the year, but I don't know. My gut tells me that the Ticats ink him to a long-term deal, and he stays and comes back as Hamilton's quarterback next year, whether they win a championship or not. But I think we can all agree we just want to see him get back on the field and hope to see him make him plays. He's a fun player to watch. But we have a game to talk about, Mike. And let's talk about the defense first off, because they were absolutely outstanding in this one. They forced 6 turnovers, which is almost unheard of against Winnipeg. Matt Nichols entered the game with a 12-1 touchdown to interception ratio. They picked off Nichols 3 times in this one. There were 2 fumble recoveries that happened on special teams, which we'll get to in a second. And obviously the end of the game, the last turnover, was the big sack by Adrian Tracy for the turnover on downs that quite literally ended the game. Ticats took over, kneeled it out, and won the ball game. This was one of the best defensive performances I can remember seeing from this team in quite some time. They pretty much took the game on their... Once Mazzoli got hurt, they got out to that 14-0 lead. I think they knew, okay, it's going to be a little rough going, but we're not going to let Winnipeg do anything. And for the most part, they didn't. like 15 points for a Bombers team that was averaging over 30 a game coming into this, and they were kind of just scoring at will against teams. I mean, this defense was outstanding in this one.
Yeah, Matt Nichols looked all out of sorts all game long. I mean, those three interceptions, two of them were terrible, terrible overthrows, and it could have had something to do with the pressure by the Ticats defense. And holding Andrew Harris to only 53 yards is a huge accomplishment for these guys, because over the years, Harris has really put a whooping on the Ticats, and he's one of the best running backs in the league, and to hold him to 53 yards is a great, great thing by them. I just thought they balled out all game long. And I know you wanted to talk about some individual guys, such as Nicholas Shorthill. What do you have to say about him?
Filling in for Simone Lawrence, leads the team in tackles. I mean, yep. He's a got Mac kid, getting his first chance to start. And I didn't notice a drop off in play at all. And that is not a knock on Lawrence. That is literally just high praise for Nick Shorthill. I thought he was tremendous in this one. I thought he was all over the field making plays. Game high 9 tackles for either team. And when you're on the field, when the guy opposite you is a guy named Adam Big Hill, who pretty much was non-existent in this game, when you're the guy that leads the team in tackles and Adam Big Hill's on the other side of the field, you had a good night.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was coming back from injury, but yeah, I get what you're saying there. And there's another couple guys that really stood out. Jagger Davis had a really good game. No sacks, but 4 defensive tackles. And another guy we really want to talk about is Jamal Roll. He had 4 defensive tackles and, of course, two interceptions. Tremendous game from him. And I believe he is the Ticats Podsky Player of the Week. What do you think about that, Josh? Are you into that or what?
Oh, absolutely. The 2 interceptions are going to get the most publicity. He almost scored on one of them. It's one of those ones where you're like, oh, just give it to him, even though it was very clear that he didn't reach the end zone. But it would have been nice to see him get the 6. But there was an open field tackle in this game when the Bombers were kind of putting some stuff together and they swing it out. I want to say it was to Walker, I think his name was. Yeah, Kenny Walker. They swing one out to him in the flat, and it's just him and Roll. And if Roll misses the tackle, it's a big first down for Winnipeg. Instead, he doesn't go for the light him up hit. He goes to wrap him up. He does it, brings him down. I've said time and time again on this show. I've said it time and time again on social media. I've written about it a ton on any piece I do for 3 Down. Solid open field tackling is one of my favorite things in foot. When I see a guy make a solid open field tackle, it's one of those things that gets me so excited that I jump out of my seat. Jamal Roll made one of those sort of first down saving tackles. And it's one of those things that people aren't going to talk a ton about. So that's why I want to talk about it. But clearly the big thing was the interceptions. I just think he had a whale of a game. He was starting in place of Frankie Williams, who they had to move to, I believe it was boundary half because Kariel Brooks was hurt. And Roll had started for the team last year. Frankie Williams had beat him out for the field side corner position, but he's gotten to play the last couple of games. And I thought this was easily the best game of his career as a Ticat and a very, very deserving Podsky Player of the Week.
Yeah. And one other guy I like to give a shout out to on the defense is Tunde Adeleke.
Yeah.
He had 4 defensive tackles and an interception. So I just really like this kid. I like his speed. He seems like a playmaker on defense. He's just going to, he's going to fly around out there. And he had a tremendous game as well.
Yeah, it's like the defense as a whole had a really good game. Adrian Tracy has a sack that we mentioned to end the game. I thought the defensive line got a lot of not a lot of pressure, but I feel like they forced some missed throws. Matt Nichols threw a few balls away because guys weren't getting open. That tells you about how the secondary was playing. Delvin Bro, I think his name's on the stat sheet. Yeah, he had 3 tackles, but didn't really see a lot of action. I mean, nope. I thought Justin Tuggle, the man in the middle, I think he's a big reason why Andrew Harris really... Now, Harris had a decent game. Like you mentioned, his rushing, only 53 yards. He was the leading receiver for the Bombers with 64. But, I mean, if my team's playing Winnipeg and Andrew Harris is the leading receiver, I think I'll kind of take that. Because
yeah, absolutely.
That means it's a lot of... Like 8 catches for 64 yards is Like, that's not huge production, you know what I mean? So, like, to hold Andrew Harris to barely over, like, I think it was 100 and, like, he had over 100 yards from scrimmage, which that's a good total. But, I mean, he never really at any point looked like he took over the game. Like, there was never that sort of, okay, Andrew Harris is just going to put this team on his back and win this game. It's because of guys like Tuggle and Shorto. I just feel like this defense as a whole just played excellent. You know what I mean? Like, it's just,
yeah.
Yes, there were some great individual efforts, but I feel like it just, like I said, I feel like they decided once Mazzoli got hurt, we're not going to lose this football game. We're not going to let this game, we're up 14-0. We're going to make sure that lead holds. And they pretty much did. The Bombers scored 15 points in this game. So really all the Ticats had to do the rest of the way was kick one field goal. And they got a few more than that. But I mean, the defense decided that they were not going to lose this football game. And that's probably the biggest reason why the Ticats won this football game.
Mm-hmm. And a big shout out to the defense as a whole for really completely shutting down one of the hottest players in the CFL right now. And that's Lucky Whitehead. He only had two receptions for 17 yards. So, you know, this was a guy that's been tearing up defenses, tearing up special teams units. And he was pretty much invincible out there today.
Invisible, not invincible.
Invisible. Invincible would be the opposite, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Invincible has been what Brandon Banks has been most of the season.
Yeah, true that.
But
true
not
that.
In this one. No. Offensively, there's not a whole ton to talk about. The offense, especially like with Mazzoli in there, like you look at Mazzoli's numbers, 6-7, 59 yards, an interception, but he also had the big touchdown run. The offense was clicking when Mazzoli was in there. And then Evans comes in.
An interception on the 2-point?
Yes, it was. So yeah, I'm not okay. Even sure if it really counts. It's
no, I'm not sure either.
Anyway.
But it is listed.
Yeah, it is listed. So, yeah. Evans comes in, offense kind of slows a bit down, like it's, which I think is to be expected. But he wasn't helped out by some of his receivers. Brandon Banks and Luke Tasker, two sure-handed guys, dropped a couple of balls that were really, really surprising for them. You're not used to seeing those guys drop passes. So as we look at sort of what the offense didn't do in this one, you kind of look at Dane Evans's numbers, 13 to 25, barely over 50%, just 94 yards. And of course the one interception, he too also had a rushing touchdown. So him and Mazzoli were even on that one. But I think Evans wasn't going to go for 300 yards based on these couple of drops, but I feel like as Evans gets more comfortable in the starter's role, and as guys like Banks and Tasker get more used to playing with him, I feel like those sort of drops and the production will increase. So it was a kind of a rough outing for a pair of our favorite players.
Yeah, you just can't be doing that when you have a young quarterback in there. And obviously, it's just one game and it's just a couple of drops. But going forward, they're going to really have to help out this kid. You know, any catch that's within their radius, they have to bring in to give Dane Evans some more confidence, make him feel more comfortable in this offense.
Now, you wanted to talk about running. You've mentioned it a couple of times, so I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about it. Let's talk about the rushing attack for the Ticats, Mike. Malik Iron saw the bulk of carries, not very many, only 9 touches in the running game for 45 yards. 5 yard per carry average, which isn't bad. Anthony Coombs didn't see a ton of action, just 3 carries for 2 yards. What are you thinking about this rushing attack? Without Sean Thomas Earlington, it hasn't been as dynamic as it could be. No. I get the feeling that you're maybe not hearkening for a change at the tailback position, but maybe hoping to see a little more of a mix-up. I don't know. What say you?
I just don't know if you'd think with our starting quarterback going out that they'd probably be more reliant on the run game. Do you think we have the guys that can really turn up the performances and really make this running game part of this offense? I mean, Malik Irons he's shown some stuff. He's still he's still a rookie, right? Anthony Coombs is not really, he's more of a slot back than he is a running back to me anyways. He's not a pure running back in my mind. I know they really want to go keep the Canadians at running back, but I don't know if we have the horses to really bring out the rushing game. I mean, what do you think? Do you think Malik Irons can carry the load?
I think he can, but I do think that when Cam Marshall is off the six-game injured list, which I guess he's eligible to come off. I guess he's eligible to come off now, so he could be. Now, if he's more hurt than we suspect, then obviously he won't be playing. But the beauty of what the Ticats have right now is you look at their roster, and they started nine Canadians against Winnipeg because Shortle took over for Simone Lawrence. So they had three starters on the defense side of the ball and six Canadian starters on the offensive side of the ball. So what that allows is if Cam Marshall comes back and healthy and they're not happy with the run game, they can plug him in and not have to switch the ratio anywhere. Even when Simone Lawrence comes back and retakes the starting position from Shortle, they start eight Canadians. You know what I mean?
Seven.
So it's because they got the four studs on the offensive line that they're going to be starting. Mike Jones is a starter, and you got Adela Kay, and you got Ted Laurent. There are your seven. Now you add in the running back. So the running back position can be fluid. So if they're not happy with Irons, if they don't think Coombs can handle the load, they can play Cam Marshall. So I think that they have the right mix, and I think you add Cam Marshall to this, and I think it just makes it a little bit more dynamic. But I do have confidence that Irons can get it done. I think much like any rookie player, he just needs time to play. That's how you kind of grow. Now, hopefully Sean Thomas Erlington isn't done for the year, and we haven't really heard much about him and his injury since it happened against the Alouettes a few weeks back. But if he's able to come back, then I think there's no concerns about the running game whatsoever. But right now, yeah, I'm not much like the quarterback position. I'm clearly not as confident in it as I would be if our starter was in there. But at the same time, they have options. You know what I mean? Like, Anthony Coombs played great when he filled in for Erlington against the Alouettes after he got hurt. My thing with these guys is I kind of want to pay more attention, and I should have done this in the game, to what their pass blocking is like, because I think that's more important for this offense than necessarily them getting 15 carries for 120 yards. You know what I mean? I did notice a couple times that Anthony Coombs did a good job of blocking, picking up the blitz, chipping a guy, what have you. So maybe he's more adept at that than Irons is, but I'm not too concerned about the running game. Or maybe I'll say this. I'm less concerned about the running game than you are.
Yeah, I'm totally for letting Malik Irons play, you know, a couple more games, see how it goes. And then if it doesn't go well, then we'll take a look at Cam or whomever. But, you know, I like Malik Irons. I really do. I think he can be a really good running back. And maybe with a couple more games experience, he'll feel more comfortable in this offense, and I won't be bringing it up in future episodes.
He did have that one nice run where he took it to the outside and picked up like 25 yards. That was
he did.
Now you want to see that more often than just once a game, but it shows me that he's got the skills. And obviously the blocking there was tremendous, but he hit the corner, hit the edge, and was able to turn up field. So everyone kind of did their job there. So you know that it's there. Just want to see it a little bit more, I think, going forward. Let's talk special teams, Mike, because once again, I thought special teams was tremendous. I touched on it a bit when we talked about the defense. They had two fumble recoveries in this. They stripped one from Lucky Whitehead, who had a fairly pedestrian game, not an invincible one, but an invisible one, invisible. But he had a pedestrian game in this one, and he dropped put the ball on the turf on a punt return. They had another one later in the game. Actually, I don't think it was even that much later. Mike Daly scooped up one. So the Ticats special teams, once again, under Jeffrey, it feels like every week the special teams making a play, whether it's a big return, whether it's a scoring play, or whether it's something in coverage. The Ticats are making things happen on special teams, and that's another reason why I'm still bullish on this team going forward. Solid special teams play is how you win a lot of times in the CFL, because it's a couple plays here and there, and if you can get a couple fumbles, or you can get a big return, or you can get a scoring play on special teams, you're going to win a lot of football games. And I think the Ticats have done that in spades, and I thought they did a really good job, especially in the area of kick coverage. They took a guy in Lucky Whitehead who, as you said, had kind of taken the league by storm. And you look at the numbers, four kickoff returns for 84 yards, but in punts, five punt returns for 45 yards, that's next to nothing.
Yeah, that guy is an up-and-coming star in this league. You know, he has the speed like Brandon Banks. Well, he's probably faster than Brandon Banks at this point in his career. Obviously, he's not as good a receiver as Banks, but the special teams have been everything they've done, everything they've touched has been amazing this year. You know, Haralahu has been tremendous. His punting was really good in this game. He had a 48-yard average on the punt, which is very, very good. You know, the field goals have been great. Everything he's done has been really, really great. So, you know, I can't complain anything from the special teams, and let's just sign Jeff Reinbold up to a lifetime contract.
A lifetime deal? Absolutely. Yeah. I want him coaching special teams in Hamilton until the day he dies. Like, I want him to die on the field coaching special teams. That's how long I want him to be here, because it's clear that this is what he was put on this earth to do.
Absolutely. And one more thing I wanted to mention about this game is the penalties. The Ticats only had 3 penalties in this game. 3, Josh, 3. And the Bombers, to the Bombers' credit, too, they only had 4. So 7 total penalties in a game. That's just outrageous for the CFL, isn't it? I mean, usually it's well over 10.
And you look at the penalties, too. 4 penalties for 32 yards, 3 penalties for 20 yards. None of, like, the major foul variety. Mm-hmm. Like, you had procedure. Like, I'm literally looking at the penalties right now. You have procedure on Hamilton, procedure on Winnipeg, no yards on Hamilton, holding on Winnipeg, illegal block on Winnipeg, illegal contact, holding, and illegal. Like, minimal penalties. Like, that's if you're
that
going.
That just makes, you know, the game wasn't that. And if the game was a little bit more entertaining, but you add to the fact that there was so little penalties, that makes the game so much more enjoyable, any game you watch.
Yeah, it makes the game go by a lot quicker, and you're not, it's not a flag fest. You're not, every time there's a big play in there were very few, like, this game was a bit of a slog to get through, especially after Mazzoli got injured. I'll be honest with that. Like, we all had Grey Cup preview penciled in our mind, and I don't really think this lived up to the hype in that respect. But I think a lot of that had to do with Mazzoli getting hurt. Again, it was 14-0 Ticats after 10 minutes, and then Mazzoli gets hurt, and it's, you never know what the game could have been. But yeah, even in a game that wasn't maybe the most entertaining, at least it wasn't bogged down with a flag fest. So, I mean, if that's one of the best things we can say about the game, I'm not. And again, we got the win, so I'm not too concerned about.
If we can keep the penalties under 5 going forward in each game, that would be a huge help. I know that's unrealistic, but. And wouldn't that be great?
Hey, it's been done once. Why can't this become a trend?
True, true, true.
So we've already mentioned it, but we'll mention it again just in case anyone didn't hear us the first time. Podsky Player of the Week is Jamal Roll. Just a big game. We don't have to go over his stats again, but just wanted to throw that out there. He had a tremendous game, as did the entire defense. And as sad as it is that we've lost our starting quarterback, I feel like in talking about this game with you, Mike, I'm starting to feel a little better about everything.
I think so too. Yeah, the initial reaction was really bad. Depression and all that stuff.
Did you put on the Twitter account "the season is over"?
Yeah, I said, "Well, there goes the season." I got a little flack, but that's all right. I was being dramatic and I was upset. Okay.
Hey, in the heat of the moment, we all thought the same thing. There is not a Ticats fan out there, I don't believe it for a second, that didn't immediately go, "Not again." You know what I mean? Like, slap their forehead and go. Because I was in the stands and you could hear a pin drop. It was silent. Like, everyone in the stadium was just thinking the exact same thing, and it was like I said, by the end of it, the defense needed us to get loud, they needed to make a stop, the crowd got back into it, but it was for a while there, even myself, there was half-hearted clapping and half-hearted yelling and half-hearted waving of the cowbell, you know what I mean? Like, it took a while to get back into the game. But it's a one-score game. The defense is out there. You get back into it. I think everyone kind of got into it. And then I think in the aftermath, we all sort of reflected. And I think kind of as a group, us Ticat fans, I've seen it. I've kind of seen the arc of everyone, oh, man, that's it. We're done. To kind of like, well, now wait a second. So, I mean, the fact that the optimism has returned, I think, is a good thing. And I think, look, I'm not saying that they're still the favorites to win the Grey Cup, but they're still a darn good football team. And I think there's still a lot of good football left in this team, and we're going to see it over the next 12 games.
Yeah, and just because Jeremiah Mazzoli isn't on the field playing doesn't mean he's not going to be a huge part of this team, you know, helping Dane Evans and being at practices and stuff like that. He's still going to be an integral part of this Tiger Cat team, and I think he'll he'll do a great service to the quarterbacks, you know, helping them out.
Yeah, he's probably going to take on the role as like a de facto quarterback coach, essentially.
Yep.
While he hangs around the team. I even saw some footage from practice yesterday. He's out there kind of getting on the guys, and you saw some videos of it on TSN. And he's just out there. He's trying to do what he can to help the team. And I think that tells you everything you need to know about the player, the teammate, and the man that Jeremiah Mazzoli is. Still first class all the way, and that's what you kind of want to see in your starting quarterback.
Absolutely.
All right, speaking of quarterbacks, Mike, we'll get into the news here now. And the Ticats, obviously, with the injury to Mazzoli, needed to sign a quarterback. I put out a piece on 3Down wondering what the team could do, a bunch of different scenarios. The most likely of one that I wrote down was kind of the one that came to fruition. I said they'd find a guy with CFL experience, but not a ton of it, to kind of play a backup or third-string quarterback role. I know there was some pie in the sky. Oh, they'll bring Kevin Glenn in, or, oh, they'll bring Darian Durant in, or, oh, they'll call Ricky. Yeah, I know. I saw your response to Chris Cuthbert on that. Or, oh, they're going to bring in Ricky Ray. And it's like, to me, those were pipe dreams. What they did, as first reported by our boy Justin Dunk, they signed former Saskatchewan Roughriders backup David Watford. He was at practice today on Monday for the first time with the Ticats. And we don't have to get into Watford. He played very minimally in Saskatchewan. Mostly he had one game where he filled in for Brandon Bridge after Bridge sucked and didn't really play particularly well himself. But what the signing says to me, Mike, is that this is very clearly Dane Evans' team. If they would have gone out to bring in a Kevin Glenn or made a trade to bring in, I don't know, an Antonio Pipkin or a Brandon Bridge, or even the one I saw that kind of blew my mind was Zach Caleros going out and trading for him. If they would have done something like that, I think it would have said that maybe the team is not fully invested behind Dane Evans. But I think you bring in a guy like David Watford, who's not going to challenge for the starting spot at all. He is being brought in because they need a third quarterback. He has some experience in the CFL. He can basically be the team's short yardage quarterback. You know what I mean? Like, this tells me fully that the team, the brass from, you know, the general manager on down, they are behind Dane Evans.
Yeah, I remember from what I've seen from Watkins is not a lot.
Watford. Watkins.
David Watkins.
Is he the invincible David Watkins?
Yes. Never mind. It's been an off day, right?
I'm
hurting from the Mazzoli.
We're all dealing with the Mazzoli problems. I get it, but I just someone was going to tweet at us and say that you were wrong. I figured let's get it out of the way now.
Might as well. Yeah, I agree. But David Watford, yeah, you didn't see much from him when he was with the Rough Riders. You know, he did a little dual role stuff with Brandon Bridge. You didn't really see him throw the ball that much. He was more of like a wildcat kind of guy. And I don't know. He like you said, he's not going to be a threat to Dane Evans. He's just basically an insurance policy. And I'm glad they didn't bring in some guy like Kevin Glenn or Ricky Ray or God forbid, a Darian Durant. But just because I just don't. They're done. Okay, they had good careers. You know, some of them had great careers, like Ricky Ray. And I think it's just their time to ride off into the sunset. No need to bring them back. You know, a quarter of the way through the season, and you know, something happens to them, they get injured again, and then you ask yourself, why do they even bother coming back? So, I'm glad that they brought in a young quarterback that has maybe some potential, but isn't going to be a threat to Dane Evans. You know, Dane Evans isn't going to be looking behind his shoulder constantly.
Look, I'm totally on board. I didn't really care who they brought in. Like I said, I figured this is the route they would take. I even wrote in the piece for 3Down. I said guys like Jeff Matthews or David Watford would be a guy that they were probably going to be looking at, guys with minimal CFL experience. I'm not going to lie and say that I wouldn't have been happy if they would have brought in Kevin Glenn. Because
one last go for a Grey Cup,
exactly. You know, like,
yeah.
And whether Glenn ever even played or not, or if he was essentially the QB3 who would have just helped mentor Evans, like Glenn went to Edmonton last year and didn't see the field at all. Like even in blowouts or in games that Riley came out of, they didn't go to Kevin Glenn. So Kevin Glenn didn't play at all last year. So I would have been fine if it was Kevin Glenn. But I'm with you, Mike. It's time to look to the future, not the past. guys like Ray, guys like Lule, Glenn, Henry Burris, like the list went on of these retired veteran players that they were like, well, what if they got him? You know what I mean? Like, no, it's time to look at the guys who are quote unquote in their prime or coming up on their prime. And I'm not saying that David Watford's ever going to be a star in the CFL, but like I said, he's not being brought in to battle for the starting quarterback position. He's being brought in because the team needed a third quarterback. He's got experience in the league, having played with Saskatchewan for a year and a bit. I don't know. It makes sense to me. Maybe like whether you agree with who it is or not, you know what I mean? Like it's not the name of the guy. It's what the guy represents. This to me was always the way that they were going to go.
Yeah. And he'll be a good short yardage QB, I think. So you can bring him in for those 1 yard plops.
Yeah. Your favorite play in the game, not from the shotgun, mm-hmm. right?
No, God, no. that play has not been working again this year. I don't understand. We'd have to get a coach on here and ask him why they insist on going in the shotgun on like second and one, third and one. Third and one even. They've been doing that a lot this year, third and one. At least a couple times.
Sorry,
Lord.
I did not mean to get you fired up there.
That's all right. That's all right. Go ahead.
That's it for Ticats news. I mean, we spent 20 minutes talking about the biggest piece of Ticats news of the week, so I figured there's not really much else to talk about. And there's not a ton to talk about league-wide either, Mike, but another scoop by our boy Justin Dunk, and I just want to talk about this really quickly. Sean Lemon of the Argos is on the trade block, and I'm posing a simple question to you, Mike. He has played for 7 of the 9 teams in the Canadian Football League. The two he has not played for are the Montreal Alouettes and the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Mike, simply for Lemon to get 8 of 9, do you want to see him come to Hamilton? And outside of that, would you like to see the Ticats maybe make a move to bring him in, regardless of whether you want to see him get so close to being 9 of 9?
Yeah, I don't care about the 9 of 9 stuff. I just want to – I don't think we need a guy like Sean Lemon on this defensive line. Any other year, I would probably say, yeah, bring him in because he's a talented football player. But this year with this defensive line – we're pretty set, I'd say. We got tons of talent. I don't think we need Sean Lemon at all.
No, I don't think so either. It would just be interesting to see him add the 8th jersey to his collection. But I mean,
I can't believe he's already gone through that many teams. I didn't. To be honest, I did not realize that.
Yeah, I think his stay in Winnipeg was only brief. I think that's where he started. I think Winnipeg and Edmonton were – I think he started in Winnipeg. I'm not even sure if he played for them. Then he went to Edmonton. I'm not even sure he played for them. Then he went to Calgary, then the NFL, then Ottawa, then Saskatchewan, then Toronto. Like, the fact that he's bounced around as much as he has also is a little disconcerting for me. Like,
and he hasn't played at all this year, has he?
I think he played – no, he did play – I know he played in the game the Ticats were in Toronto. But I think that might have been.
But other than that, yeah.
I think that might have been the last game he played. I don't know. It's when a guy bounces around from team to team like this, it raises red flags to me. And like he's been with the Argos. I think this is his second stint, maybe even his third stint with the Argos. I can't remember. But he's been there. They sign him to an extension, and they get rid of him, and then they bring him back. It's all very, pardon me, very strange to me. But no, I'm with you, Mike. Jagera Davis. Adrian Tracy, and the guy that we're forgetting, I think, is Jamal Westerman, who's about ready to come off the 6-game injured list. They're going to add him to that defensive end rotation. I don't really think there's a place in here for Sean Lemon, especially if you have to trade for him. Like, what are you going to give up? And then you add. Now, I know the Ticats obviously have some salary cap savings with Mazzoli going on the 6-game and being out for the year. They probably have $200,000 to $250,000 they can play with. So bringing in Lemon at his value, like his contract value, wouldn't be a problem, but I don't really see where he kind of fits in with this team.
No, me neither. I don't see any reason why to bring him in. You know, I don't know if he has an attitude problem and that's why he's bounced around so much, because obviously he's a talented guy and can get it done on the football field. So I just don't think there's any reason to bring him in and potentially rock the boat with his attitude if he has one.
I agree. All right, Mike, we're going to get back into our weekly game thoughts from the other 3 games this week. But we're going to do a little bit different this week. We're going to go in reverse order because the first game of the week had the biggest sort of controversy that I want to save that till last. That's the main event of the things we're going to talk about. So let's go with the most recent game that was played. That was the Saskatchewan Roughriders absolutely dummying the BC Lions to the tune of 45-18. Mike, I have a simple question for you in this one. Does this win tell you, or does this game, sorry, tell you more about how good Saskatchewan is or how bad BC is?
I got to go with how bad BC is because, you know, they had 18 points and two of those touchdowns were Ryan Langford returned. So, you know, the offense was abysmal. Mike Riley's just getting killed back there. You know, they have all this talent on that team, but they can't seem to put it together. Obviously, the offensive line is a huge mega problem. I look like a fool because I picked them to finish first in the West, I believe. So it shows how much I know. But, yeah, they're just a mess right now. I got to go with the BC is just that bad.
Yeah, I'm with you, too. I think the Riders – I think they're 3-3 right now. That feels to, like the Riders feel like a 500 team. Like they feel like they're good enough to compete in almost every game. But when they play the elite teams, when they play the Winnipegs, the Calgarys, the Hamiltons, I think it'll be a rough go for them. Clearly, William Powell is still the guy. Like, I think he had 3 touchdowns in this one. Yeah, but I too think this just tells you how bad. Like BC brought in a lot of guys, but I feel like it's going to take a while for this thing to get going. I don't know how low they're going to sink, but yeah, I think this game tells you just how far BC is from being a competitive team. And I'm with you too. I don't think I had them finishing first. I think I had them finishing third to start the year. You know what? I'm going to look that up just because I did keep our predictions because I wanted to be able to go back to them at the end of the year and be able to.
I know you had Winnipeg number one.
I definitely had Winnipeg one. I had BC finishing third. So,
okay.
I don't know, man. The Lions look like it looks like it's going to get worse before it gets better, which is good for us because the Ticats have a couple of games coming up against the Lions over the next few weeks. So hopefully the Lions stay poopy for the next little while and Ticats can get a couple of victories over them. The next game we're going to talk about, Mike, in your backyard. Edmonton over Toronto, 26-0. It's a simple question for me, Mike. Are the Argos ever going to win a game?
Whew, that's a tough one. I mean, didn't they score 1 point in a game earlier this season, too?
Was that them or is that Ottawa?
Oh, that might have been Ottawa. Either way, to score zero, I mean, the Toronto Argonauts are... I'd have to say they're worse than the BC Lions. At least the BC Lions know they have a starting quarterback, a real, you know, star of a quarterback. The Toronto Argonauts are just a complete mess. Corey Chamberlain doesn't know what he's doing. Their defense looks terrible. Their offense is abysmal. You know, they got Chris Rainey returning kicks, and he hasn't done anything back there. You know, it's ugly. I did not get to see this game. I had to work. So, I it was here in Edmonton. It was one of the first games I haven't been in a while, which kind of hurt my soul, but that's all right. It sounded like an ugly game anyways, but 26-0. Now, not even get a rouge, a single point. I mean, you got to be bad if you're not getting a point in a CFL game.
You look at their upcoming schedule. This Thursday, they play Winnipeg. Then they play Edmonton. Then they play Montreal. Then it's Labor Day. If the Owls are as good as we think they like, if
they might be,
yes, then that's probably not a win. No. I don't see them beating Winnipeg. I don't see them beating Edmonton. And like this is 3 straight at home too. Like the Bombers, the Esks, and the Owls, they play them all at home. You got to think if they're gonna win a game, it's got to be there. Then it's the Ticats. Then it's on the road to the Red Blacks, then they host Calgary, then they host the, like, are we looking at October 5th at BC is maybe because the Lions, like, I look at the schedule, man, and I don't see a game, like, I don't think the Argos are going to go 0-18. I really don't. But you look at this schedule, and it's hard-pressed to find a game where you'd go, I think this might be the one. Like, they just look bad.
Has Jim Popp lost his touch?
Jim Popp has lost Anthony Calvillo, so yes. Jim Popp had Tracy Hamm and Anthony Calvillo, and since then has had nobody, and they've stuck, like, and look, he brought in Anthony Calvillo. He deserves all the credit for that. Tracy Ham was a Hall of Famer before he ever got him. He just extended the Hall of Fame. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know if
it's... Yeah, and Don Matthews had a lot to do with that, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely, he did. But you don't have a... maybe he's just not good at finding quarterbacks. And if you can't find quarterbacks in the CFL, you're in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. And, we hate the Argos. You know, Argos suck, all that good stuff. But I don't want to see them be this bad. You know what I mean?
No, I do.
Okay.
No, I absolutely do.
Fair enough.
No, fair enough. Like, look, we always talk about the off-field stuff and the business and losing money and yada, yada, yada. I get it. It's not fun to pick on them when they're this bad because, like, what's the point? You know what I mean? Mm. Like, you're kicking someone when they're down.
But, going into the season, I think we both had them,
I had them fighting for a playoff.
Mediocre.
I had them fighting for a playoff. Like, I thought – I remember I had them in Ottawa. I couldn't decide who was going to be 2 and who was going to be 3. And yeah. I guess I should have been deciding who was going to be 3 and who was going to be 4.
And then of course, like – every year, I think we've done this podcast, I've always been high on Montreal saying, they have a lot of talent on the field. And then this year, I'm like, they'll be fourth. And, it's still early, but they look good. So
I guess we should have talked about the whole – did we talk about the Cavis Reed firing? Yeah, we did, didn't we? That was a few weeks before. Because, we've missed a couple of Joes in here, and I can never remember what we've covered. I think we talked about that, didn't we?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah, no, we definitely did. Because we talked about how he failed upwards. Okay. I guess for a second there, I was like, man, did we ever talk about that? Because you're right. You're always high.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, we definitely did. You're always high on the Owls. And now they don't have Cavis Reed. It's like, maybe they will be good.
Now Joe Max are on the show, right?
Yeah, our boy Cliffy D over at the Alouettes Flight Deck, he takes umbrage with people who are like, oh, man, what a joke. Joe Max run. I'm with him. Joe Mack is a puppet. He's not. He's got no power. He's got no authority. No,
he's just there.
He's just there because he was there. They're not going to let Joe Mack do anything.
No, he's not going to be the head of Canadian scouting or anything like that, I don't think.
I sure hope not. All right, Mike. The last game we're going to cover, which was the first game of the week, and there's a reason why we kept this for last. Calgary, on a last-second field goal, beats Ottawa 17-16 in Ottawa. And I just got to set the scene here, Mike. It's 16-12 for the – I was going to say the Rough Riders. Then I almost said the Renegades. My God, we're all screwing up today. It was 16-12 for the Red Blacks. The Stamps are driving, and they fumble the football on, Ottawa's 2-yard line. The Red Blacks scoop it up. There's, a minute left, and everyone's like, oh, my God, Ottawa's going to knock off Calgary. They go 2 and out, and they're punting from their own end zone, and they're up by 4. And Rick Campbell makes a decision that I personally think is completely indefensible. He concedes the safety to make it 16-14, thus making it a field goal game. They kick it off. The Stamps get a good return to, midfield. Boom, boom, boom. A few plays later, Rene Parrott is kicking, 35-yard field goal to win the game. This to me is the worst coaching decision. This is Jason Moss bad. Let's kick a field goal at down 7 with 2 minutes left in the West final, and we're at their 20-yard line. That's maybe because of the situation and because of the game and all that. That might be the worst coaching decision I've ever seen. June Jones punting for the single in BC last year is something that I will really never forgive. That was inexcusable. This is right up there with this. I do not understand, and maybe you can tell me that you do, but I'd love to hear someone explain this to me. But I do not understand when you're Ottawa and you have not allowed a touchdown all game. The Stamps literally had 4 field goals, and you have a 4-point lead, and you give up 2 points to make it a 2-point lead. I do not get. If I was in charge of Ottawa, I may have fired Rick Campbell right there. That is so indefensibly bad that I don't know if I can trust his decision making going forward. Is there any way that you can defend this decision, Mike? Or are you with me and you're just saying this is absolutely insane?
No, that's absolutely insane. I think, I defended Jason Moss's decision a couple weeks ago. I think they were down by
the one this season, they were down by 10. And
kick the field goal.
Yes, we debated that and we disagreed, but we saw. I remember that one.
Yeah, but this with a team like Calgary, who's been struggling offensively for, you know, Arbuckle's been okay, but they haven't been great, and especially in that game, they haven't been great. I just don't see why he. I guess he just overthinked it. I mean, I don't know what he was thinking. You know, you gotta kick it, punt the ball, make them score a touchdown. There's only a minute something left. I do not get it. He gets my first Bozo of the season. My first Bozo award of the season goes out to Mr. Rick Campbell because, yeah, even if I'm playing Madden, I don't see the logic in that.
No, honestly, like, I just don't get why you take a 4-point lead and make it 2. I get you punt the ball. Maybe Calgary starts at the 40. Maybe they start at the 45. Like,
Calgary just slinky, snaky little ways they win, eh?
Yeah.
Just, like, it keeps going.
Yeah. But, like, I just don't understand how you can just give up points. Like in that scenario where you're making it, to me, it's the same thing. If you're up 11 in a game and you concede a safety, that's fine because it's still a two-score game. If you're up 10, okay, maybe, because they still have to score a touchdown and you get a two-point conversion. But if you're up 8 and you now it's a touchdown wins the game. You know what I mean? This is the same scenario, even worse because they don't have to score a touchdown. And you had stopped them. Ottawa's defense played really well in this game. Like I said, they held Calgary to that point to 4 field goals. So at worst, you're thinking they got a minute, they got to drive down the field, but they haven't scored on us yet. And Rick Campbell's a defensive guy. He was a defensive coordinator before he was head coach. I don't understand how he doesn't trust his defense.
And like, Noel Thorpe's still there too, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah. One of the best defensive coordinators over the past 10 years. I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
You punt that ball. You hope that your coverage team makes a play and holds them to like midfield, and then you tell your defense to go out there with 45 seconds left, 50 seconds left, or however many seconds it was left. Tell them you go out there and you win us this football game. We punted because we trust that you will not give up a touchdown.
And let's face it, the Stampeders aren't as good as they were in the last couple of years.
Nope.
I mean, so offensively, defensively, they're not as good. So you got to punt that ball deep. I mean, for a guy that looks confused 24 hours a day, I can kind of understand where he's coming from because he's just – the confusion, like, took over his brain. But, man, that was a bad call.
Yeah, that was that's maybe the worst call so far of the season. It's one we're going to have to hold up there. It's for me, it's the Bozo play of the year. You know what I mean? Like, the worst possible – like, to me, this is like accidentally handing the ball off to the wrong team. And letting like that's how bad this was. Like
just running backwards into your end zone.
Yeah, the old Jim Marshall. Yeah, this is just I don't know, inexcusably bad. So I'm looking forward to someone coming out and defending the decision, and I'd love to hear the reasonings for it. So I hope someone does, and then I can figure out if I believe them or if I think they're full of crap.
They should be in a room with padded walls.
I think so. I think so. All right, Mike, let's preview, last thing before we get out of here, this week's upcoming game. It's Thursday nighter in Regina against the Riders. Can I say for the record, I hate Thursday night games, and I especially hate Thursday night games when our team – like, you obviously doesn't affect you because you live in the West, but I hate Thursday night games. This is a 9:30 kickoff. I've got to get up for work the next day, and I'm going to stay up till after midnight to watch this game. Like, that's – no, this is – If we killed Thursday night football, I would not be upset. What say you?
I don't mind it.
You're wrong.
But then when you're going to play, you're going to play on Sundays, then people will complain about that. You know?
Yeah.
You play 2 on Friday, 2 on Saturday each week?
Honestly, that is my dream. If you could make that happen, you play an East game at 7, you play a West game at 10, you play 2 games on Saturday, maybe you do a game on Sunday before the NFL starts. I don't know. I just hate Thursday. I hate Thursday night games.
Don't you love the country music though? That goes along.
Yeah, the concert series has been fantastic. Please notice the excitement in my voice. Now, I'm not just saying this for the CFL because usually I get ragged on for it. Well, you just hate it because I hate Thursday night football in the NFL too. Like I just don't like Thursday night games. I want to be able to stay up and watch the game, and I'm gonna work all day Thursday, then I gotta get up Friday morning. It's not a good look. So death to Thursday night football.
And I think there's a doubleheader this week on Thursday night.
Yeah, and there was a doubleheader last week too. It's like
I don't like those. Sense.
No, because they overlap.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, like, I don't like that.
Anyway, let's talk about the game. Ticats are in Regina to play the Riders. Ticats are 5-1, obviously. The Riders are 3-3. Obviously, this will be Dane Evans getting his first start of the season, the second of his career. Riders-Ticats has kind of been a bit of a slugfest, like a low scoring. Like, honestly, I wouldn't surprise me if the final was something similar to what it was against Winnipeg, like a 23-15, 23-18 type game. That's what I'm kind of seeing from this one, Mike. What about you?
Yeah, I see the same thing. You know, you got two backup quarterbacks. Fajardo's looked pretty good. Dane Evans, you know, we haven't seen enough of him yet. But, two solid defenses. If I'm betting on this game, I would take the under, depending on what the number was. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it's going to be a low-scoring defensive battle.
And I think the main thing for me from the Ticats for this one, Mike, they got to find a way to slow down William Powell. Powell played great against them in the week one win here that the Ticats had. We saw William Stanback gash this defense. The run defense has improved. We mentioned Andrew Harris just in this game earlier today. So I feel like it's there to do it. We know the Riders are going to run. They have some good receivers, but they don't really have like that. Like they don't have a Brandon Banks on their team. They don't have like a Darrell Walker. Like they don't have that one guy that it's like when push comes to shove, you feed it there. Like Naaman Roosevelt's good, but he's kind of fallen off the last couple of years. I know they have Manny Arsenault, but he seems like a shell of his former self. Evans and Moore are both good players, but they're not that like guy you fear sort of thing right now. So I don't really know.
There's no stars really.
No, there's no stars in the receiving corps. So I don't know if the Ticats really have to worry all too much about the Riders beating them in the passing attack. I think they really need to focus on not letting William Powell kind of run all over them. If Powell has a big game, I think the Riders win this one easy. If the Ticats can limit Powell, if Powell doesn't have 100 yards rushing, I think the Ticats win this one.
I'd have to agree with that. I think that the Ticats have to, you know, invest in their running game a bit more in this one as well. Maybe, you know, give Malik Irons more than 9 carries so we can see more of him. You know, give him 15 to 20 carries. See what he can, you know, put up on the board. Because he's still a young kid, he's still developing, but behind that offensive line, I think he can do some damage. So, you know, Dane Evans isn't going to be passing the ball as much as Jeremiah Mazzoli would, obviously, so maybe hand off the ball a little bit more.
Yeah, it'll be kind of interesting to see what the Ticats' game plan is in this one with Evans there. I think this is a good place for him to start, too. Like, obviously, Mosaic is a tough place to play. But the Riders haven't really been selling out games this year, and it's a Thursday night game, so I feel like the crowd's not going to be huge. If the Ticats can get out to a good start, and Evans can kind of get into a rhythm, and like you said, they mix in some of the run and maybe rely on that a little bit more than they have in the past. And I mean, this defense, like, look, on paper,
and the special teams,
absolutely,
the special teams might put up some points. You know,
well, that's just it. If they get a special teams return, like the Lions scored 2 against them on special teams last week. There's no reason to think Frankie Williams or Brandon Banks can't put one in the end zone either. So, like, look.
And I don't want Dane Evans to – I don't want the offensive scheme to be, you know, hit screen. Let this guy throw the ball. You know what I mean? He's got a hell of an arm.
Let him
throw it downfield. Let him make some mistakes. You know, we're 5-1. We have a little bit of breathing room. Let him develop in this offense. Don't be scared. Don't be like, you know, Brandon Bridge was last year in the Saskatchewan offense or whomever, that they just wouldn't let him throw downfield. Let this kid throw the ball downfield. Let him make mistakes and learn from them.
I agree. I think like we've talked about at the top of the show, I think the rest of this team is good enough to overcome any mistakes that Evans makes. And when you look at, like, yeah, okay, so this is a guy making just his second career start, and he's coming in on a short week, and, man, maybe our inherent pessimism as Ticats fans should look at this and go, I don't know if they stand a chance here in this one. The Ticats are a better team than Saskatchewan. Like, I don't think that's a news flash. Like, even without Jeremiah Mazzoli, the Ticats are a better team than the Riders. And there's no reason why they can't go in there and win this football game. It's not going to be a blowout. I think it's going to be a close game. But there's no reason the Ticats can't win. There's none whatsoever. So you're going to see a lot of people be really confident in the Riders winning this one. You're probably going to see a lot of pundits out there pick the Riders to win this one. I think the Ticats can go in there and surprise a lot of people because this team is talented, top to bottom. And it's not like the Riders have their all-star quarterback in there either. They got their backup in there, and he's got a few more games experience than Evans. But, I mean, he's absolutely not. But I see no reason why the Ticats can't go into Regina and get a win on Thursday to bump the record to 6-1. I really don't.
I could totally see it happening. I mean, you know, you said it all. We got a good team here, and, you know, Jeremiah is out. We just have to plow forward, and I think we can be 6-1 after Thursday night. I really do.
It feels weird to say that, though, but the Ticats are good. You know what I mean? Like, I think we should say that more often because I think we spend a lot of time, like, hemming and hawing about that stuff, you and I in particular on this show, but I think we need to just say it. Ticats are good. This is a good football team.
They're a good team, and one player doesn't change everything. You know, it sucks that it was the most important, you know, one of the most important players on the team. But, I think we can get some wins down the stretch here. And, well, not down the stretch, but before Labor Day, and then go into the second half of the season looking pretty good.
Yep, I 100% agree. So the Dane Evans era begins on Thursday, Mike. But this week for us has come to a close. So that was Podski Weaver for this week, and I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.
Thanks for listening. Find more great shows like this at CF Pod Network on Twitter.